All right, welcome to Speak for Yourself. I'm Jason Whitlock. That is Marcellus Wiley, that dude. Coming up, I'll tell you why Dez Bryant going back to the Cowboys isn't as crazy as it sounds.
And I've got another installment of the award-winning Dat Dudes Dudes. But we start every show with a Whitlock. So what you got today, big dog?
Oh, man, I got Le'Veon Bell and one of the greatest holdouts in NFL history. Mm. He's the biggest winner of a contract dispute since Emmitt Smith. Conventional wisdom says that all the new rules in football have diminished the running back and elevated the quarterback. There is some truth there if you have one of the three or four most skilled quarterbacks in the league. Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers, and Drew Brees can consistently win games without a reliable running game or running back. Pretty much everybody else needs a top-flight running back. The Steelers need Bell more than they need Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster.
Ooh.
Just ask Big Ben Roethlisberger. He and the Steelers look like trash without Le'Veon.
Thought it was trash.
They look almost identical to the 1993 Cowboys who tried being cheap with Emmitt Smith and lost the first two games of the season when Troy Aikman and Michael Irvin couldn't make up for the absence of Emmitt. Le'Veon has skipped four games so far this season, and the Steelers are 1-2-1. This is not an aberration. Since Le'Veon arrived, when he runs for 100 yards, the Steelers are 17-3, Marcellus. Mm. When Antonio Brown gets 100 receiving yards, they're 26-13. Big Ben knows what I'm talking about. He sounds desperate.
Yeah, if he can come back and help us and be ready to go, then we'll be ready to welcome him back. So, you know, I think there was a lot of things were said earlier in the year, but that's kind of in the past now. We've moved on, and hopefully he's moving on in the sense of getting back and ready to get with us.
Anybody remember a month ago when the Steelers offensive linemen were trash-talking Le'Veon Bell and singing the praises of James Conner? The Steelers swallowed the conventional wisdom that running backs are interchangeable, that the new NFL is a purely quarterback league. We all need to stop it. Do I love great quarterbacks? Hell yeah. Patrick Mahomes is my new favorite player. I might try to grow his crazy hairstyle.
Don't do it.
But running back is still the most exciting position in football. If I had to choose between watching Brady, John Elway, or Joe Montana's best games and watching the best games of Jim Brown, Barry Sanders, or O.J. Simpson, it's not even close. Nothing is more compelling than watching one back torture 11 defenders for an afternoon. Let's quit pretending the only reason to turn on the TV on Sundays is because Brady might throw a game-winning touchdown pass. Beyond that, let's quit acting like Bell, Todd Gurley, Ezekiel Elliott, and Kareem Hunt aren't still very essential to winning. Football hasn't so radically changed that picking up 4 or 5 yards on first down on the ground is unimportant. Not every quarterback can manipulate the safeties with their eyes and pre-snap reads the way Brady and Brees can. Most quarterbacks need a running back to move and fool safeties, which is the key to beating a defense. Look at what Christian McCaffrey is doing for Cam Newton this season. Look at what Gurley is doing for Jared Goff. It's time for the Steelers to pay Le'Veon Bell big money.
Pay up, pay up.
Big Ben isn't the same without him. It's time for us in the media to drop the narrative that running backs aren't as valuable as they used to be. Bell won his contract war with the Steelers and proved once and for all running backs are still highly valuable. In fact, for quarterbacks, they're more valuable than wide receivers. Marcellus, big victory here, in my opinion, for Le'Veon Bell. He has won his contract dispute and put running backs back on the pedestal they belong.
You can pound this table all you want. No way did he win this negotiation. No way. He didn't get what he wanted. How do you spell
yet?
Yet. Okay, we can go yet, but let's live in your Whitlock right now.
Yep.
Present. Let's spell Le'Veon Bell with a capital L. And that's what happened in these negotiations. Capital L. He didn't get what he wanted. The first thing he said was,
yet,
I want a long-term deal. Has he gotten a long-term deal yet, Todd Gurley style? Okay, so let's move on. All right, now you say, I'm going to hold out. I'm not signing that franchise tender. I'm going to hold out as long as possible. We know what that means, week 10. Reports are he's coming back before week 10. If you're going to rest, rest fully. How come you're not resting fully? Did you get what you wanted there? And then last point is, not only is he going to come back early, prematurely if you're his agent, He's coming back with the talk of, I want to be a Steeler for life if they want me. So look, all the levels of this negotiation or the bravado of the negotiation, he's falling short on every one of them.
I said this yesterday, but again, you get married, you get out of the game, you lose all contact. You can't read the tea leaves anymore,
Marcellus. Oh, that's me? That's me?
You can't read the tea leaves.
Help me out.
There's a moment when you're dating somebody and you go, oh, she's all in, or he's all in, mm-hmm. or, oh, I'm going to get some. And that's where Le'Veon Bell is. He's like, oh, I'm going to get some. Oh, okay. They're going to give me what I want. He's read the tea leaves. They've been embarrassed without him. Big Ben and Antonio Brown can't even get along without him. Big Ben's play has fallen off. Mm. They're 1-2-1. Mike Tomlin can't win without him. He has read the tea leaves, and no, have they given him the contract yet?
Right.
But he's sitting back going, just a matter of time.
Just a matter of time. One more date. Cheesecake Factory, one more time. That's all.
That's all it's going to take.
Look, Odell Beckham went through the same beat, so I respect that. Without the holdout, but still, internally, there was a conversation that was had that said, Odell, you calm this down, and we got you. So maybe that is happening, but I am not investing my future and banking on a franchise that I've been with for multiple years to all of a sudden have that change of heart without actually putting pen to paper. I need to see that.
Let's go to the second layer here then, because this is why I think it's inevitable. They have to. What do you think of my contention that Le'Veon Bell has proven that, I think he's more valuable than Antonio Brown and the success of that team. And so I also just think, just more valuable, but he, so that means he deserved, his original demand was, I need to be paid like Antonio Brown. Mm. I think he's proven that point to the Steelers organization, that he's more valuable, just as valuable. And so eventually they have to concede that point.
Yeah, I mean, he had a tremendous platform to stand on. And the premise was, not only am I a top running back, but I'm your number two receiver behind Antonio Brown. And so you can't just divide up my value. You have to supplement my value. And that's what he should have stood on. You're absolutely correct. Think about it. Like, there's no Antonio Brown greatness this year so far. No games over 100 receiving yards. And what's the difference? Now we're saying the chemistry between Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown is off. Why? Juju didn't get as many reps with Ben Roethlisberger in the offseason and preseason as Antonio Brown did. It's because that special sauce, you know, it's special for a reason. And it is Le'Veon Bell. So certainly he has proven his value in his absence, like you said, with Emmitt Smith.
And I think, again, I think we all got caught up in the narrative. Hey, it's a quarterback league. It's a passing league. It's the receiver. And the league has value. They've been comfortable paying receivers. I think this year when people sit back and look at what Christian McCaffrey is helping Cam Newton do and what Todd Gurley, and again, I don't want to take anything away from Jared Goff.
Right, right.
But Todd Gurley's just a big part of that. If you have that back in the backfield that you have to respect, it's easier for Cam Newton or Jared Goff, any of these guys, even Matt Ryan without Devontae Freeman in Atlanta. Look at, they're 1-3. And struggling a bit. I think the running back is having a resurgence and reproving its value, and the league and the media and the executives in the league are going to have to react. I would love to be Le'Veon Bell's agent right now because I think I got the wind at my back.
Yeah, timing is everything. I mean, a couple years ago, you're being devalued. The narrative is you're devalued. The carries are down. The yards are down. And everyone's saying, hey, we'd rather have an extra receiver out there. But playing quarterback at the franchise level, when you're one of the premier quarterbacks, it's all about that extra guy in the box. It's all about that safety. So before, we were saying, hey, quarterback, you're responsible for manipulating that safety with your eyes, with your foot, with your footwork. But you're saying, which is even more important, which has always been football, have somebody back there that I respect, and the safety's already in that box. So it's just a numbers game that now we're starting to see that running back can help.
And I tell you, this is, again, if I'm Le'Veon Bell and I look at Gurley, I look at Christian McCaffrey, it's not only do you have to respect them if they get handed the ball, we've moved into a zone where these safeties can't handle these running backs in pass coverage.
Yeah, yeah, good
and
point.
So it's, that's a quarterback's best friend, handed him the ball, and or throwing him the ball, because you go look at Dallas and what happened with Dak last week. The number one guy they're targeting in the passing game is Ezekiel Elliott, who made the big play down the field. The running back position, to me, its value is resurging. I've never given up on its value. I certainly, as a TV draw, it's driven me crazy. Oh, and people just tune in to see the quarterback. I was like, man, you know how long I've been showing up to see Walter Payton and O.J. Simpson and Barry Sanders and these guys? That's the number one draw for me is a television element as much, and I love the quarterbacks, obviously. They're important for winning and all that. But just sitting back and enjoying football, I'd rather see a running back do his thing.
Okay, you've been through too many negotiations to not respect that there's another side to this table. That on the other side, there's going to be pushback. And here's the pushback. Okay, you're telling me all this value for the running back, and you need the running back to have the premier passers of the game live up to their optimal levels. Tom Brady, how's that running game looking? Okay. Oh, no. Oh, you don't want to hear Tom Brady? Aaron Rodgers, how that running game look? So I'm just saying, every negotiation I've been in, even when I thought it was a slam dunk for me, they had something to push back.
And I'm giving you Rodgers, Brady, Breeze. That's a special case of really experienced, really talented quarterbacks. When you go look at these young quarterbacks, under 30, a Cam, Goff, in order to get them there to that over – you need a running back.
Absolutely.
And then you got guys like Ben that, again, he's getting exposed without a running back. So I feel very comfortable.
We ain't looking at the camera trying to get out of this. This is the question for you, Mr. Kansas City. Which one is more exciting to watch, Tyreek Hill or Kareem Hunt? Move on. Now look at the camera because you know that answer. Stop it. Nobody wants to watch Kareem Hunt.
Yeah, Kareem Hunt runs a whole – he ain't Barry Sanders.
Okay.
He ain't O.J. Simpson.
He was a beast, though, and said, I'd rather watch the running back.
Tyreek Hill plays a little running back.
Yeah, he is in the backfield sub.
All right, stick around. Later in the show, we'll give you our approval ratings for Le'Veon Bell. Here are our ratings for Le'Veon before this whole mess. Marcellus and I both had him as an all-star. We'll see how his holdout affects his ratings. The fall's most kick-ass new drama is about to kick off. Wednesday, October 10th, the highly anticipated new series All American premieres on the CW. Suspense and superhero mastermind Greg Berlanti, producer of massive hits like Riverdale and Black Lightning, is now about to kill it in the sports genre as well. Inspired by local football hero Spencer Paysinger, All American is about a high school football phenom from South Central who gets recruited to play in Beverly Hills. Tay Diggs crushes it as Beverly High football coach Billy Baker, a former star player in his own right who sees himself in Spencer. Coming off two losing seasons, he also sees Spencer as a ticket to job security. Billy promises Spencer the chance to someday go pro and give his family a better life. The relationship between a coach and a player who each have everything to lose is the driving force behind some pretty intense drama, both good and bad. If you could draft a fantasy football team for fall TV, All American would be in a league of its own. Catch the series premiere of All American Wednesday, October 10th on the CW. All right, welcome back to the show. I'm Jason Whitlock. He's that dude. You all know Marcellus is that dude.
Yes,
now
sir.
He's going to show us the best plays from big guys around football. It's time for that dude's dudes. Marcellus, what you got?
Oh, man, I got to show love to the big uglies. Just not just us up here, but the guys in the trenches who don't get enough love. So let's start off with the big uglies. And number three, that dude's dude, is the Jets D-tackle Leonard Williams, who's going to go with the three-pronged approach. Look at him. You see him loop around, get to the quarterback, sack on there. Also had four tackles in the game. But let's see how he got there. First thing he's going to do is identify, I want to go inside, but look at that brick wall. I'm getting double teamed. So instead of going through the double team, he's smart. He's going to look at guard A.J. Cann and now hit him with the old college move. And since he's lunging, A.J., you know you can't be in that position. That's the shrimp position. Every D-line coach loves to see offensive linemen in that position because he's lunging. Now you got to get over. And how do you clear? That is with the right arm, the clear technique. A lot of times you see that arm out there, it's for a reason, to get past the offensive lineman, making sure he can't recover. Leonard Williams, you're our number three, that too.
Pretty good.
Let's go to number two. It's going to get better, big dog. Let's go with the sophomore D lineman, Quiddy Pay. Here, Quiddy, Quiddy. Look at here, Quiddy, Quiddy, Quiddy. Michigan beat
Quiddy Pay or Quiddy Pay?
Oh, Whoopatai, Supatai. Quiddy Pay of Michigan. First, he has his eyes locked on Northwestern quarterback Clayton Thorson. He sees him right there, but, oh, there are three guys in front of me. How can I get to him? Got these hungry eyes right now. So it's time to go to the lanes, time to do a little bowling. Watch this action that happens here. He ain't quitty. Everybody goes because when you're out of position, everybody fell. And now he's like, let me be gentle. I know the new rules. I'm going to lay him softly on this bed so I don't get the flag. And quitty, lays him down. Number two.
Those Northwestern linemen look Rudy Poop.
Poop. And now for our number one, that dude of the week. Andrew Whitworth.
Finally.
Whitworth is greater than Whitlock. We all know that, but let's show you how. Look at him coming out there on the second level. Not one, but two guys down. And he hasn't allowed a sack all season. So this is the first thing that happens. You see him coming around the corner. Look at his tail for the tape. When you see these two dudes lock eyes, I know you're a Ram and I know you're a Viking, but uh-oh, trouble's ahead. 6'7", 330 versus 5'10", 192. Guess what that sounds like?
Mayweather versus Tyson.
And here we go. Boom, boom. What you got to say about this? Come on now. Yes, you did. You lost the tail of the tape, you lost that play, and laughter in the meeting room. And Andrew Whitworth, or sorry, that dude of the week.
Finally an offensive lineman with the greatest play of the week and the greatest play of the season.
Had to hook you up, big dog. Had to hook you up.
Appreciate it. All right, Marcellus, that was awesome. Let's move to some big stories. Starting in New York, where the Giants are off to a terrible start, and so is the $90 million man, Odell Beckham Jr. Mm. A lot was made of Odell's off-field transformation this summer, but now Newsday says it might be hurting the team on the field and that the Giants should let Odell go back to his old crazy ways. Marcellus, is Odell why the Giants are struggling?
I won't go as far as saying he's the reason, but certainly the emotional, mental makeup of a player needs to be respected, no matter how crazy it is. Because we're talking about football, a great game of skill, a greater game of will. You need to let a player go to that third rail. As you always say, we're touched. So you got to let me go to that place, coach. I answer this question in story. I was in San Diego my first year. Mike Riley was our coach. And Mike Riley witnessed me break my foot when I first got to San Diego, before the season even started. I'm the highest paid player in franchise history, and all of a sudden, I'm not even gonna play a game. And then I had surgery, came back 2 weeks later, did not practice one time that year. And Mike Riley saw me play well, make the Pro Bowl, all pro, and in the offseason, you know what he came to me and said? He said, Marcellus, amazing year. I don't know how you pulled it off with one leg, a great year. But let's talk about your leadership. Let's talk about how other players are looking at you and looking up to you. We want you to tone it down. We want you to calm it down. Now, remember, I'm the DJ. I'm pregame music, postgame music. They play my song during the games. I'm not practicing. I'm boisterous. I'm enjoying putting my foot in an ice bucket while my teammates are out of breath, and I'm laughing at it, but I always showed up. Why I give you that story is because they calmed my emotional makeup down. Coincidentally, my production started to decline as well. Be careful what you do to Odell between the ears.
That's a hell of a story, and you put me, because I have a whole different take in terms of, I don't think Odell needs to be immature to have success. I think they need a better quarterback, period.
True.
And so they can sit here and talk about Odell needs to be crazy. Like, no, he needs a quarterback who throws the ball accurately on time to Odell Beckham Jr. But you just moved me a bit in terms of, that's fascinating.
Yeah.
And because trust me, I remember that year you had, and I remember going to San Diego and like, man, they let this dude kind of wild out. They play his music and he's out here dancing and doing all.
Yeah.
And toning that down took a little of the edge away. That's a fascinating story. And maybe, so I'm going to give it a kernel of truth to what Newsday is saying about Odell, but mostly I just think they need a young quarterback to get him the ball.
Good point.
All right, to a big story out of New England, where Gisele Bündchen appears to have changed her tune about husband Tom Brady's decision to keep playing football. Last year, Gisele made no secret of her desire for Brady to retire sooner rather than later. But yesterday on Good Morning America, she had a very different message.
Tom has talked about his retirement. He kind of said, I'll play five more years, and you've had said some other things. But in the book, you kind of said, what will be.
Yeah, just, because, you know,
he's happy.
Yes, because when you love someone, you want them to be happy. Yeah. I never seen someone love something as much as he loves football. And it makes me happy if I said anything in the past, is because you have a concern. You know, no one is going to hurt someone I love, you know? You just feel very protective of them. So obviously, if someone hurts my children, my husband, anyone I love, I get like a lioness.
Marcellus, I thought Gisele would force Brady to retire before he wanted to, but after listening to that, it sounds like Tom may get to play as long as he wants to. What's your take?
Yeah, I think that her initial concerns were genuine, and I think that now she's like, hey, I put my hands up. I'm going to allow you to do what you love to do. And she's respecting not only his passion, but the calendar of life. You talk about a professional athlete, and we have a finite shelf life. I don't give a damn how good you are. It's coming to an end, right? And I think she finally respected that, hey, he can only do this one time in his life, and then it's over. There's no coming back to this. So let him go out there and do what he loves best. So that sounds like the evolution of a relationship where, hey, I like the opera, and you don't like the opera, but we like the opera. So it's, you know, now they're in accord and thinking the same way.
Listen, I was someone that thought, look, she's got just as much money as him, half the money, if not more.
More.
And she's got all the Gisele. And so I thought that gave her the power in this relationship. And my contention, you know, when Colin and I were doing the show, was like, Gisele's going to win here. But I got to go a different direction here and say that, and look, and this will be a controversial statement. People get upset when I say this, but this is very inspiring to me. This is like, when I hear people say, make America great again, this is what I think about. Tom Brady taking back control of his household.
Oh, what?
Because a lot, listen, Marcel, what I say to a lot of guys, what? A lot of guys run around the house and some guys run their house. Oh. And it looks to me like Tom's running his house again. So when I hear, this is like a return, you know.
A return of what? What are you going to say?
To the happy place where a man can be a man and, you know, kind of, you know, I kind of like this and respect this. And maybe that's why Tom was wearing the hat all this time.
I am not talking to you about gender roles and power relationship. Look, first of all, if you really want to put the symbols of who's the man in that relationship, Gisele got more money than him.
I know.
More recognizable. She running this thing. So she's the man if you want to go with those traditional terms, but let's get off of that. Let's talk about why she did cave.
Yeah.
Because quarterbacks have a charmed life. You play ball, who wears the red jersey in practice? The quarterback. Who should play forever ball till they fall? Kickers, punters, quarterbacks. Nobody's touching you except 8 times on a Sunday. Stop. And only 2 of those hits hurt. So I think that finally he broke it down. He said, baby, I could ride this till the wheels fall off. Now,
it's very inspirational.
Yeah.
It's very inspirational. To see Tom Brady, again, she's got more money than him. She looks better than him. She's more famous than him.
Yeah.
But Tom is still, you know.
So you over here championing for Stedman over Oprah? What? No.
Stedman's a Ball State grad, so yeah.
No, Stedman.
But look, if I was dating Oprah now, I would do what I was told.
Exactly.
I would do what I was told.
Yeah, I hear that.
Tamron, if you're watching Tamron Hall, same goes for you. I'd do what I was told.
That's your one.
But to see Tom Brady, you know, back on top, this is
a beautiful thing.
All right, welcome back. I'm Jason Whitlock. Next to me to the right is Marcellus Wiley, or your left. Joining us now are Fox NFL analyst Mark Schlereth and D'Angelo Hall. Let's move to Dez Bryant, who is still no closer to having a new job than when he was first cut by the Cowboys back in March. Dez has spent a lot of his unemployed time sounding off on social media, and now after a question on Twitter about where he might sign, Dez responded that he'd rather, quote, be with the Cowboys than a new team. And as crazy as it sounds, I think that's a good move for the Cowboys. I think Dez Bryant's been humbled. I think that there's no risk to bringing him in. If he doesn't work out, you just let him go again. I think it's a no-lose situation for the Cowboys. I'd pick up Dez Bryant for cheap and cut him if he didn't work out.
I think it would be a bad situation. Humility is not even a part of the equation. It's a bad marriage. It's a bad second marriage if you're Dez Bryant. He doesn't have Tony Romo anymore, who was a franchise quarterback, a risk taker, outside the pockets, off script playmaker. Now he has a conservative, safe, third-year player who's still trying to play for his money and averaging 215 yards per game and safe throws and needs the running game to be beyond explosive for him to show elite numbers in production. So I think that Dez Bryant would come back and he wasn't separating before. Whether he could do that now or not, he's not getting the 50-50 balls. Romo would throw a 50-50 ball. If you didn't catch it, I could deal with the results, the consequences. Dak Prescott's not in that mental space right now. I think it would be a bad marriage.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think they have enough receivers that can't beat one-on-one coverage right now. Can he play offensive line? I mean, if he come back and do that, I mean, isn't that what we're looking at? I mean, I look at this team, the way this team was constructed years ago, you had one of the best left tackles in football in Smith. He had a great offensive line. Now Smith has chronic back issues. You got a rookie playing left guard. Your center is gone. Your all-pro center and Travis Frederick is sick. Your right guard, who is the highest paid guy in football, hurt his knee in camp and is not 100% healthy. And Collins, your right tackle, is really better suited to play guard. Mm-hmm. So that's how they built this football team, to dominate a line of scrimmage, to run the football, to give your receivers opportunities to be one-on-one off the play action and affecting the underneath coverage, because you have to respect it. And they don't have that anymore. So I don't know how Dez Bryant's going to fix that. I just don't think he will.
Yeah, that's kind of where I am with it too. Would it be nice? Yeah, it would be nice, but I don't see how it helps them win football games. And the ultimate thing that they did when they got rid of Dez was because it was the distraction in the locker room. It was having a young guy in Dak Prescott that you're trying to say, hey, this is your team. You know, no more Jason Witten. Sean Lee's on the way out of there. You get Dez Bryant out of there now, too. And now you can say, hey, young guys, it's on you guys. And so I just don't know. It's kind of that same dynamic you saw in Carolina when they kind of rushed Steve Smith out of there a little bit too soon to let Cam know, hey, this is your team. I just don't know if the progression of Dak Prescott with Dez Bryant in his ear would be a positive thing. Same. But if they brought him back, does this mean, hey, maybe Dak's not the guy? Maybe he's not who we thought he was going to be. And it's okay if we have a guy like Dez in that locker room. So there's a lot of different components to this that I just don't see how it would work out. But it'll be interesting if he goes back.
My thing with the Cowboys and Jerry Jones is, like, they're always in win-now mode. And y'all are talking about developing young receivers, developing Dak. Jerry Jones, to me, is about, I want to win this year. And if Dez Bryant in any way gives them a chance to be 2% better wide receiver, 3% better wide receiver, and because it's an easy out, I just don't see what the harm is. Their recent, and again, I get your point, Mark, it's like it's just another receiver that can't separate. I think if Dez Bryant were in the right mindset, like previous, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, in the right mindset, willing to take a reduced contract and humble himself and not be a distraction, there's upside to Dez Bryant.
Man, stop. They went to a concert, a Beyonce concert together, and he ain't get a deal. If you listen to Beyonce with your owner and you can't get a deal after that, you know what? It ain't happening, man. They already laid out the red carpet in terms of their relationship. We have mended that. And nothing came from that. So this is a situation where you're overthinking it. Like, it's a great story. D'Angelo nailed it. Great story. Not going to do much in terms of the X's and O's. Don't overthink this.
They've been in a win-now mode, like you said, since Jimmy Johnson was coaching there. And how much winning now have they done since that point?
I was going to say that. That's always the goal, but it never seems to materialize. And if Jerry Jones actually looked at this roster, this roster isn't set to
right. The
right
O-line's not there. The defense is coming, but not there yet to play to that standard. All you got is Zeke that you really can bank on right now, and then you got some pass rushers like DeMarcus Lawrence, et cetera, but that's not enough. Not in today's game. Not with today's ammunition that's coming from the quarterback.
Yeah, when the Rams putting who they got out there.
Man.
Dallas don't have a chance, man.
Without Dez, the Cowboys are off to a sluggish 2-2 start, which has already sparked some Jason Garrett hot seat talk. Speculation about Garrett's job is an annual tradition at this point, but according to a new book by former Dallas Morning News writer Gary Myers, Jerry Jones just can't bring himself to fire the coach. As Meyer explains, Jones likes him and is adverse to starting over with a new coach. He is comfortable with Garrett and may think this is as close as he will ever get to adding head coach to his many titles. And so, but, you know, Gary's position is that Jason's the perfect puppet. And Jerry is comfortable with that. And I don't think it's a puppet deal. I think Jerry has heard the criticism that early on he was too quick to fire coaches, and he believes in continuity. and stability. And, you know, to me, I think he's maybe sticking with Jason Garrett too long, but I don't think he's afraid or adverse to firing Jason Garrett. I think it'll happen this year if the season doesn't go well.
I'm with you. Like, stability comes before success. Even in the dictionary, Coach used to say that message. So here's the thing. I'm looking at this like you need to create a stable culture. And the turnover, because of lack of results and success, you've always had turnover. And it's finally like, look, I have a coach who's intelligent, who keeps his players in line for the most part. Let's just think about it. Outside of Dez Bryant, I can't name all the issues that's going on with them within that locker room. I can't. And then this is a coach that not only does those things right, but is better than the average coach. And whatever your criticisms of him is, he hasn't had a ton of great pieces on that roster consistently to manufacture consistent excellence. He just hasn't. So instead of saying, okay, get rid of the coach, and then we go back, and then we're going to look at Dak next year and say maybe he's not a franchise quarterback, just keep one standstill and then try to address other needs.
Here's my issue and why I don't think Dallas will ever win the way they're currently constructed. Because it's one thing to appoint a coach, another thing to empower a coach. Mm. And if you don't empower your employees to do their job, guess what? You will never win. If there is always a back staircase to the owner's office to circumvent any situation, you won't win. I know this about players, and I was a player, and you guys were players. You give us an inch, we'll take a mile. Mm-hmm. And there's got to be somebody in charge. And if you feel like that guy that they've appointed but not empowered has no power, he's been emasculated, and you go straight over his head to the owner to get something done, then players will do that. And if that's the situation, I believe that to be the situation, you're just – you may have a season where you win some games. You may have a season where you're a playoff team, but you will not consistently win when that is the structure of your organization.
See, I don't know if that's what's going on in Dallas, because I, too, having played against Dallas for all those years, you know, it kind of got lost, the records. You know, I was just worried about the game itself. Mm-hmm. But then when I go back and look, Jason Garrett took over in the middle of 2010, 5-3. 8-8, 8-8, 8-8, 12-4, 4-12 with Tony Romo, hurts his collarbone twice.
Right.
13-3, 9-7, and he's 2-2 this year. I'm not seeing a coach or a team that's 4-12 or 5-, you know.
Yeah.
I'm not seeing that. This team has been consistently average. They haven't been great. They've been great. They've been great at times. And so I think they have the pieces. I don't know the dynamic that goes on in that locker room or with that organization, but I know what I've heard of Jerry Jones. And I know he tends to have his hands in the cookie jar a little bit, making decisions and always around. And so I don't know if that's kind of what you're talking about, Mark, as far as taking some of the power away from Jason Garrett. But when I see him on the field and he's commanding that team, I feel as though he has power. I feel as though those guys follow him.
He doesn't
have some of the same voices echoing what he's said in years past, because a lot of those guys have moved on. You know, your Jason Witten's, your Dez Bryant's, Tony, you know, he's been
gone
a while.
But he suffers from the optics. Let's be real. If Jerry Jones is in the room, he's going to suck the oxygen, and we're going to think he commands everything.
He's one of those type of guys.
It's not always that dynamic. And let's be real about NFL football. This is why you don't want to chase your tail. This is why you don't want to get rid of your coach every single year. Since the Patriots have been dynastic, 0-1, only three teams have won over half the Super Bowls. I'm going to say it again. Of all the Super Bowls that have occurred since Tom Brady became the man, only three teams, and that's the Patriots, that's the Giants and Steelers, have commanded over half the Super Bowls. That means 29 other franchises out there, you're going to be chasing your tail if you keep getting rid of your coach, because there are not a lot of opportunities to win. They're commanded by a few stable franchises. The rest of you guys, try and stay pat and get a one-off if you're the Saints. Get a one-off if you're other teams. But most of that is already taken care of by those three dynastic teams.
Yeah, and as a player, I hated when I got new coaches, because at the end of the day, that coach isn't running down there. He's not missing tackles. Mm. He's not dropping the ball. He's not getting beat deep. You know, he's not throwing bad interceptions. And that's why everyone wanted me to coach. And I'm like, man, coaching is so frustrating, because there's no way I can line you up, practice it all week, put you in position to make that play, and then watch you not make it. Like, I don't understand. Is this not important to you? And a lot of these guys, it's not important to them. And so I'm with you. Continuity is the formula for success. You have to keep a system together, but it has to work
too. Right. And there's got to be a culture of accountability.
Yes.
There's got to be a culture of being willing to sacrifice for one another. And this is what I know about culture. It's like irrigation. Water follows the path of least resistance. Hmm. That means wherever that easiest path is, that's where it'll go. And if you don't establish your culture and adhere to that culture on a day-to-day basis, and you preach that culture, and then you hold guys accountable to that culture, if you don't do that on a day-to-day basis, it's gonna follow that path of least resistance. And that is a recipe to have average football teams. Yeah.
All right, thank you, Mark D'Angelo. All right, welcome back. Whitlock and Wiley, we're joined now by Yahoo Sports NBA insider Chris Haynes.
Yes, sir, love it.
Let's move to Kevin Durant.
Do it, boy.
Who's entering the final year of his contract with the Warriors and is already facing questions about his impending free agency. But Durant isn't coming out of his way to reassure Warriors fans, explaining his approach to free agency, saying, quote, "Just be honest. I was honest with my decision, but just like outwardly, if people ask me about it, don't be ashamed to talk about why I decided to move teams and switch teams, because it's not the end of the world. I didn't do anything against the law. You know what I'm saying? That's what I thought happened the first time." To me, all this transparency is not a good sign for Golden State. If you're sticking in Golden State, I don't know if you need to be all that transparent.
Yeah, exactly. To me, I mean, it's an amazing experience. I get all that, but don't think you're the only one DMing her. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, other teams are like, yo, we got packages out here too. And, you know, curiosity can get the best of us. So, I mean, you know this team, you know him, very close, intimate connection. What do you think?
Well, I just think right now, I know from the Warriors' standpoint, they would hope that he would just shelve all the free agency talk. You know, they're going through a little contract situation with the guy by the name of Patrick McCall, who is not even a rotation guy. And they got to the point where Coach Kerr a couple days ago was like, look, we're not talking about Patrick McCall right now. You know, we want to focus on his team. So if they're saying that about Patrick, I know that they hope and wish that Durant wouldn't be so transparent, at least throughout the course of the regular season when they're trying to get their third straight NBA championship.
He could make this season a soap opera, and Chris, so far right now, you would be the co-star of this soap opera, because this morning you indicated the Knicks may be a possibility for Kevin Durant. Expound on that for
us. Well, that's been out there for a while, Jason. You know, look, he has a representative, his business partner, Rich Kleiman, who's based in New York. His business is based there in New York. There's a lot of ties there, and they're going to have cap space in order to bring in not one but a couple marquee players such as Durant. So that's going to be a team that I know that's going to be intriguing when it's all said and done. And let's keep this in mind. You know, I said this before, but when you think about the Golden State Warriors, even though Kevin Durant is the second best player in the league, I think most of us would agree with that.
Yeah.
It's still Steph's team. And so him leaving or bolting, it wouldn't have the same ramifications that it did when he left OKC. So if the Golden State loses in the finals or wins in the finals, I think we believe they'll get there, it's not any pressure on him to bounce, because I don't think that he feels like he's endeared there as much as some of the other players who've been there from day one.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, there's some parallels between LeBron James and when he went to the Heat, and there was an out for him to go, because that was still Dwayne's team and Wade County and all that stuff. So I get all that. Not sure if you have any kids. You have any kids?
I got four.
Four? Oh, yeah. God. Woo,
man. All girls.
You're not wearing it.
All
though.
Girls.
It don't crack, does it?
Oh, my okay. God. You got four girls.
Four girls. Boy, girls. You were at Fresno State. You were an animal, huh? Let me let this go. So you've seen The Lion King 1,001 times.
Uh-huh.
I know
yes,
I have. The Circle of Life.
Yes.
And let's talk about how the Circle of Life applies to Kevin Durant. This is what happens for every single athlete I've ever met, and in private, they will all agree to this. Uh-huh. First thing you want is the money. Let's not act like anything else matters.
No doubt.
After that, we want the accolades. And people always say, no, you want the accolades first. No, you don't. You don't want to be all NBA and making $600,000.
Yeah.
You don't want to be all pro and making $1 million. You want to get the money, then the accolades. Mm-hmm. What comes after that is peace of mind. Like, I just want everything to be still. Let me enjoy the moment, stay in the present. Then the next step is happiness. That means all of a sudden, if I'm LeBron James, I want to go somewhere and expand my empire, expand my career, my movie interest. If I'm Kevin Durant, I got my business interests. How can I make those explode even more so? I think he's right in that place between peace of mind, finally just taking it in. Hey, y'all hate me. Forget it. I don't care. But where can I go and elevate this? Sometimes you get stale. Success can get stale. Coaches always say that. Don't get bored with success. He might get bored with it. Another Finals MVP, Steph's team. Yeah. It was kind of easy.
For one second, Chris, before I want to add another layer to Marcellus' deal, I think what Kevin Durant wants, and I think those things are right, but respect.
Ah, there you go.
Respect is the issue. And when I hear you say that New York is a possibility, I still think Kevin Durant is still in that mindset, I want to be the man. I want to unseat LeBron James. Yeah. And New York is a place where he could potentially do it. You know, you got a media center out here in LA, but the ultimate media center is New York. And if he wants to, if he could be the king of New York, he could potentially unseat LeBron.
No, no doubt. And, you know, people are trying to throw the link out of him and LeBron possibly teaming up. I think that would be the worst case scenario for a person like Kevin Durant, because we all know he's tired of the narrative that he did, you know, he contributed, but he didn't lead the team. You know, he joined a well-oiled machine already. Yeah. So him going to New York, where it would be his team, and then you got the likes of Kyrie Irving out there, you got the likes of Jimmy Butler out there potentially. So it can be set up for him that can be his team, be in a big market where he can expand his business, but also he can take that next step. Because, look, we all know he is sensitive. I talked to him about not responding to people on social media. He was like, why do I gotta stop? I'm a young man, people coming at me, I should be able to come back at him. So that is not gonna stop. But he does get tired of that narrative, and I think that would be one way of him trying to overcome
it. You lead the Knicks to a championship.
Woo, it's all
right. That's as big as you can as do in the NBA.
And you're the man.
Marcellus, I know Chris is your boy.
Yes.
You give me a lot of grief about my one earring. Could you talk to Chris about this, his part in his hair?
That's
1992, Marcellus.
Hold on.
Family matters.
Hold on, talk about now. If y'all allowing Shannon Sharp to come every day with that old school car, come on now, y'all can let this go. Come on,
that'd be $8.
Come on, now. You better stop. Y'all let Shannon go in here, y'all unchecked.
Good point.
Come on, now.
All right, welcome back to the show. Whitlock and Wiley. We're joined now by Fox College football analyst Joel Klatt. As you know, I'm a journalist, and we've got our resident Ivy Leaguer here, Marcellus. So we're going to put on our thinking caps and take a deeper look at some of the big stories in sports. We've got a special cap for our Columbia grad, Marcellus. Darnell, bring it on in, the cap for
It gets brought
Marcellus.
In every time.
Yeah, it gets,
yeah.
Gets
uh-huh.
brought in.
Yes,
yeah.
There we go.
You're confined to the Waldorf Astoria.
We're going to have to change this up at some point.
Never. My degree won't change.
That ain't going anywhere.
All right, let's
That's
stop.
Right.
All right, let's move to the NCAA, which is the subject of a new documentary called Student Athlete, produced by LeBron James and Maverick Carter. The film takes direct aim at amateurism in college sports and follows several storylines, including a five-star basketball recruit, a walk-on football player at Baylor, and a former football coach, an injured basketball player, and a graduate struggling in post-college life. Maverick Carter clearly had high hopes for the film, saying, quote, I would love to see this film play a meaningful part in forcing an overhaul of the NCAA. More immediately, I hope we reach a lot of the young athletes working so hard for the NCAA machine. I watched the documentary, and it wasn't that good. It wasn't a meaningful shot at amateurism. I'm someone who is not a fan of amateurism. I think it's outlived its usefulness. The documentary, you know, was kind of pointless, and some of the athletes that they focused in on were a distraction. It wasn't a great shot at the NCAA, but however, the question for us today is amateurism worth saving? I say no, hell no.
Yeah, let me preface it like you did. Really excited to watch this one. I thought I was gonna get a profound look at what we all know, which is the worn out path of amateurism is dead, pay these players. We've heard that a ton of times. I was seriously underwhelmed watching this. I didn't think I got to a higher ground. I didn't hear actual numbers or policies or the economics of how to pay these players in clear, concise ways. So underwhelmed there, but look, project after project, if you're LeBron James and Maverick Carter, sooner or later you're going to miss a shot or so. That said,
hopefully one day they'll make a shot in television.
You said that. I think they've made some shots. But for you, Joe, to me it was an A train and it was a B train. The A train was the obvious. NCAA, come on, you're making too much money. Pay the players. B train is, can these players, and especially these parents, stop living the dream before you make it and live the reality and then be surprised by the dream instead of the reverse?
Yeah.
I'm tired of seeing that as a storyline.
Great point.
It's a terrific point. And it leads into kind of what I wanted to talk about here, because I did bring some facts and numbers, in particular some values that I think should be what we're talking about. For instance, and I'm going to take college football as my example because that's where I live in kind of my daily life. 1998, the average college football coach made $417,000. They just released today the 2018 version of all the coaches' salaries in college football. The
average head coach or
head
all
coach? Head coach. The average head coach in college football today makes $2.6 million. Mm. That's with accounting for the $400,000 contract at Old Dominion and so on and so forth. So that's not just averaging out the Power 5 salaries. That's every college football salary out there for the head coach. That's a 523% increase in 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
That's incredible. And you could think, well, hey, growth, television, we get it. Well, if you look at what a degree was worth in your next year of salary in 1998, it was about $40,000. A bachelor's degree
was worth $40,000.
The next year was worth $40,000. You could make $40,000 that next year. Guess what you can make now? 20 years later, about $50,000.
Oh.
So that's a 26% increase. So we've got one sector of people that had a jump of 523%, and the other is 26%. There's something wrong with that model. There's something wrong. And Marcellus, more to your point about preparedness once we leave the education realm. We sell to these kids that you're going to come here and get a degree and that that's going to serve you well forever. But the reality is that we're taking athletes that are ill-prepared for the universities in which they're headed. We put them into paper classes and just keep them eligible until our needs are served. And then we sell them, head out into the society. So guess what? That's all they've got.
I want
to
stop you
there.
It's
the one track, you know, to get the contract. I think that's a big problem.
I want to pause there just for a moment and just say, because, look, I think amateurism needs to go away. However, I think it's unfair to generalize that these schools just want to keep you eligible. These schools put everything in front of you. If you want to just stay eligible, go that road. If you want to be a Rhodes Scholar,
I'll buy that.
Go this road.
You know what? I'll buy that.
Ball State University put it all in front of me.
And it's up to
you. And it was up to me. Yeah. And that when I watched that documentary, that's what I kept saying. It's like, hey, man, some of this is on you.
Sure.
You know, they showed some kid and it's like, hey, go take this job at Enterprise.
Right.
And that rang true to me because one of my best friends growing up, his first job out of college was at Enterprise Rental Car. Yeah. And now he owns an American Family Insurance Agency, takes care of his family, has a great career. And so I just wanted to stop you there. I think these universities put it all out in front of you, and some of these kids don't take advantage of it, and then they just want to whine and cry.
I think both can be true. Wouldn't you agree? You know, because there are some that are just floating through.
Well, let's be real. I mean, at Florida State, which is a football factory, no shots at them academically, but Myron Rhodes walked out of there as a Rhodes Scholar.
Yeah,
so,
you bet.
So, like he said, and it's
there to be achieved.
And I know I have a unique experience because I went to a high academic institution and still made it to the league, so I'm not trying to talk from an elite position. I'm talking from the position where I was being recruited by football factories, and I chose to go this road. The exposures, like, I'm tired of hearing players, students, and I definitely am disgusted by parents who continuously give emotional charge to the football field and the basketball court. But when a kid comes home talking about his school situation, you don't have the same energy, the same transmission. So then we blame the NCAA after the fact when in preparing for the NCAA, you never gave that the proper respect. And that's disgusting.
Candidly, I'd never thought about that. So I love what you guys are talking about. I do have a model that I think could compensate players for what they're worth, because I do think it's ridiculous that the two skills in our country that you cannot monetize once you're an adult is playing basketball and playing football until we deem it necessary or deem it possible for you to go do so. And don't give me the fact that, you know, doctors and this and that. That's a degree. You know, you're getting to a point of entry, whereas this is a skill. There are people skilled enough to make a living at that craft and are prevented from doing so in the United States of America. That's not right. True. Having said that, I would love to, as a model, to compensate players, not just compensate them, you know, hey, here's a few thousand dollars. Give them back their name and likeness, like we do in the Olympics. I think the Olympic model could actually serve for a great model going into the collegiate space and allowing kids to own their name and likeness. Now, you would have to govern that in a very certain way, and it'd probably have to be one advertising firm that were able to dole out some of those dollars, but just giving them back their name and likeness, I think, would be a great start.
I like that. I mean, if you talk about it, I always say an annuity. Like, you know, give me something that reflects what I did of value for your institution and give that to me the postgraduate 20, 30 years after I'm out of your school and institution. Amateurism was created in a culture, in a time where college was a privilege beyond. We're talking about for white, wealthy males, 2%.
Let me throw in one other thing to your point to talk about where amateurism really was created. It was created by elites to keep poor people from playing sports. You couldn't economically afford to play sports, and by keeping it amateurism, no one's getting compensated. The elites could dominate but continue.
Exactly, and now those statistics have changed. So we have now over 50% of high school graduates are college students. Yeah. And you look at that, if we have a new world, we need a new way. So amateurism is dead. However, knowing that's your reality as a parent, as even a student athlete in high school, prepare for the numbers. What did they say? 90,000 collegiate student athletes and the NBA and NFL drafted 300? I don't care what math class you failed. You know that if they only taking 300 in two sports, and I'm out here thinking I'm all world and I'm a five-star.
At 30 years old, the one kid in this documentary still tracing football. I want to throw out something, because, Joe, I'm a little bit surprised. I generalized, thought you would be more protective of amateurism. I've been a harsh critic of amateurism. Walter Byers, I thought, laid it out, the former head architect of the NCAA, about where amateurism is now that so much money's been dumped into it. Having said that, I don't believe everybody needs to be financially compensated.
No, I don't either.
And so
that's why I think it should be name and likeness.
Well,
because you're earning it. That's your value specifically to you.
My solution is more allowing the NBA and the NFL to get involved with the kids who are actual prospects for their league and offer them highly compensated internships during the summer with the NBA and the NFL. If you go to a pretty good law school, you can get an internship over the summer that pays you as much as $10,000 a month in an internship.
Yeah.
And so if you're Marcellus Wiley or LaDainian Tomlinson or some football player, I would have no problem if you're some great prospect, if you had some summer internship that paid you $100,000.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, subsidize look, it's a farm system. Subsidize the collegiate experience. NFL, NBA, you can do that. They do it with the WNBA, so let's not act like we can't. But there needs to be a minimum salary. If you're on a water polo team, give me something.
I really don't believe that, because here's what I think I deserved. I was a mediocre mid-major college football player. What I felt like would be good for the rest of us that aren't pro prospects, give me another year or two of free education post my playing career. So many guys pour so much into the football or basketball that really when they get to the end of it, they're not prepared for the workforce.
Right.
I was one of those guys. They taught you can't do internships and all that. I wasn't able to do all those newspaper internships. And so when I got to the end of my degree, all I was qualified for was for a $5 an hour part-time job at a newspaper, because I hadn't done the internships. I hadn't applied myself enough during my 5 years. Give me an extra year as a college student. Let me you know, really, really focus in on the academics thing, give them 2 years or whatever. I would rather see that for the rest of us than just handing kids money.
Right.
I know what I did when I got some extra money.
That's why I said annuity. Don't give me the lump sum day of graduation or pre-graduation because, you know, at that time, you're just too immature to handle it.
All right, welcome back to the show. Marcellus, you know I can't stand social media.
I've noticed.
So it's time for Darnell Smith, our social media manager, to come over and try to soften me up. Not gonna happen. Darnell, what you got today?
Man, we're gonna start off with your favorite guy right now, Pat Magic. Everything he touches is going viral right now, from his left-handed throws to this monster deep ball he threw during warm-ups on Monday night. Looks like it's going almost 100 yards. Y'all think he'll ever unleash this during a game?
That's one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. And you got to remember, I grew up with Jeff George, who could throw it 80 on a dime. Easy. I haven't seen anybody throw it that easy, almost the length of the field. You know, today was one of my happiest days, Marcellus. Pat Mahomes, he followed me over Twitter.
Did he?
Yeah.
Whoa.
Can't wait to crawl into his DMs.
We got to rename this whole topic, this whole segment. I thought you hated social media. You love it now, huh?
Pat Mahomes followed me over Twitter.
Man, I need to come over. Man. Pat Mahomes, don't forget about his co-host. That's amazing. Where did that ball land, though? Like, I've seen 80. I've seen 70s. Mile high also, you know, altitude. But I'm not taking anything away from that. But I need to know exactly where that ball
altitude,
landed.
That's a good point. Because Pat Mahomes. I saw Pat Mahomes this summer come to L.A., Steve Clarkson's camp. He's a very competitive guy, even in the NFL, out there competing with those college kids throwing the ball.
Yeah.
And I'm not quite sure he could throw it 90 in L.A.
Yeah, so interesting. But, hey, amazing. And more importantly on the field, it's accurate and it's deep. The boy is amazing.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, moving over to the other Magic man, Ryan Fitzmagic. It seems like years ago, he was dazzling people with his tracksuit and a hot start. But the shine is gone now that he's been benched. Still, the Hall of Fame is bragging on Twitter that they got his jersey from when he became the first QB in NFL history to throw for 400 yards in 3 consecutive games. I think the Hall will feel silly for featuring this Fitzmagic jersey.
Yeah, they need to stop it. They can't just bring every jersey out to the Hall of Fame.
What?
It's been about three or four years since I've been to Canton.
Yeah, it's a record.
It's that new history because of the rules and whatever, and 3-game record, blah, blah, blah.
New history? Like, first of all, they're not just saying, hey, can we get your jersey? Oh, you have to earn this accolade. You have to earn these numbers to go out there. Don't get mad. Don't hate the player. Hate the game. And the game is, if you set an NFL record, send me that jersey. And Darnell, you real disrespectful in your write-ups about how Fitzpatrick, like, you clean up the write-up. Like, you're like, should the Hall even consider him? He did something that no other quarterback has done before in those first.
Everybody can't get a trophy. I mean, he had 3 good games. I've had 3 good consecutive games. I didn't get a ring for it.
Okay, so if you set an NFL.
Thank you.
Wait a minute. If you set an NFL record for rushing in 1 game, you're going to sit there and say, well, don't send that jersey
Hall
to the Hall. It's only 1 game. They would ask for that jersey.
That's a significant record. This is.
By your standards.
This is interesting. It's not a real record, right, in my opinion. Mm. All right, Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, moving on to a story that just won't go away. Earl Thomas, who's come under fire for flipping a bird on Sunday, but writer and former player Dominique Foxworth tweeted, it's not Earl's responsibility to raise your children. Marcellus, you're a father. Should parents be bothered by Thomas flipping a bird?
No, not at all. Look, it's not something you desire, but at the same time, you should be more concerned with your kid on damn Fortnite every night. You know, there are so many images out there, and the job of a parent is not to say image go away, is to help your kid translate what that image means and make sure they don't internalize the negative. Blaming this dude for that, that could be a teaching moment, if anything.
I don't know if blaming him is right. I agree with Dominique's sentiment.
Yeah, me too.
Too often we're caught up in celebrities and their ability to influence our kids.
Right.
Too often. But there is truth to the fact we live in such a pop culture driven world. And social media has amplified pop culture in such a way that celebrities have far more influence over kids than they did when you and I were growing up, you know.
True.
And so I get the sentiment a bit, but check out Bud Adams, the owner of the Titans.
yeah.
Check out him.
Double.
Yeah, he's been doing the double birds.
Give me that.
That's bad, too. That's worse than Earl Thomas.
Yeah, that is. Hey, Bud, can you calm down? Oh, I don't see those tweets.
All right.
Let it go.
Darnell, what's next?
Yeah, moving on to a video that's been buzzing on NBA Twitter. The Dallas Mavericks are flying in style to their preseason game in China. Check out this luxury plane they're on. Almost looks like some fancy hotel in Beverly Hills or Whitlock's nice high-rise apartment out here in L.A.
Yeah, no invite.
Jealous of this plane or?
That's doing too much on a plane, in my opinion.
Really?
Yeah, because you set that kind of an atmosphere. That, to me, says, oh, I'm going to have as many cocktails as I want. And once you start having cocktails and you got a bunch of athletes on there that, you know, all know the same girl on Facebook or all, you inviting a fight on the plane, in my opinion. You're inviting a disagreement. This is doing a little too much for me.
You know what? It sets a standard that if a team like the Mavericks, which is what, mediocre outside their one championship, if I'm Kevin Durant, if I'm on the Warriors or something like that, I'm like, step your playing game up. If I'm LeBron on the Lakers right now, I'm like, I'm not flying in no regular first class. Like, there's another level. So, once again, Mark Cuban, man, as an owner, sticking out and making sure that everybody got to keep up.
Yeah, I guess this is what you got to do in Dallas or somewhere, not one of the NBA hubs.
Right.
Make it as nice as you can. I can remember years ago when they first opened, I think America Airlines Arena or whatever, it had amenities that no one else had.
Yeah.
This is right on brand for the Mavericks. Again, I think it's doing too much. That looks like a party's about to pop off.
And it will.
And it will.
Soon you turn that phone off. It will. Let's get
it
going.
All right, Darnell, what's next?
All right, last but not least, we're going to talk about Carmelo's debut with the Rockets. Melo had 13 points. But this clip right here of him taking a long two-pointer and telling the Rockets bench, my bad, had Twitter cracking up. Should the Rockets fans get used to my bad, Melo?
My bad, Melo. Yeah, but it's not going to be about him taking twos over threes. It's going to be about that ball coming to him and everything just coming to a halt and a stop as Melo looks around and starts figuring out for the next 15 seconds how he can get his shot off.
Yeah.
That's when it's going to be, my bad, fellas. I'm a ball stopper. But him taking a two over a three, I got no problem with
it. Yeah.
No
jab problem. Step, jab yeah, step. My bad. And then you're going to add that Kobe move when you get older.
Don't put the gold in there. Don't put the gold in the conversation.
He ain't got the headband, YMCA old man. So jab step, pump. Oh, man, this is going to be all bad. But, hey, Melo can shoot. Like, say what you want about Melo OKC. Melo still can shoot. He's just, you know, the defense.
Unguarded, he can. When somebody's in his pocket.
In Houston, you guarding Carmelo? No, because you got James Harden and Chris Paul. You're not guarding Carmelo.
He's not a catch and shoot guy. He's a catch and pump. He's a catch and jab step. He's going to give you a chance to guard him. Melo's the only guy, the only superstar I've ever seen in the NBA is like, oh, I can guard him. The only one.
Oh, yeah, right.
All right, great job, Darnell. Thanks, Darnell. Love the WC, the Warren
Central.
Always
represent.
Always represent.
That's hot. I give you.
All right, great job. All right, today we're looking at Le'Veon Bell, who, as I explained earlier, is winning his battle with the Steelers, who are now desperate to get the All-Pro running back. My approval rating for Le'Veon stays it stays the same.
Mm.
I've got him at a 74. He's an All-Star. I take him down 2 points in job performance. Availability is the greatest ability.
True.
He's been unavailable, so I 21. I move him up a point in all-time greatness because he put his name right there with Emmitt Smith in terms of punking a team during a contract negotiation.
Okay, that's strong.
Character, I'm going to go with an 8. He's about that life.
Yeah, keeping it real goes wrong.
Authenticity, 23 because
what?
He's about that life.
Wait a minute.
I move him up one, 74 overall.
No, wait a minute. That authenticity is way off.
Why?
Grandma said, say what you mean and mean what you say. I thought you was going to do a holdout. I thought you wasn't coming back.
He did a holdout.
Abbreviated holdout. He coming back week 7. We thought it was week 10. What happened? Look at that face.
Because he won the negotiations and they're begging to get him back.
Oh, he got a long-term deal. He did not.
It's going to happen. You can't read tea leaves anymore, man.
Man, you're right. I'm out the game. But you know what? Me. I'm still around. Wiley, put up the real approval rating right here.
Please.
Job performance, obvious, 23. You got to keep him close to the top because the dude is just all
world. He's been unavailable.
Yeah, he is. That's why he's not 25. But when he's out there, he's all pro at two positions. Let's be real. All-time greatness, 22. Anytime you're in a LaDainian Tomlinson, Marshall Faulk conversation, you're high on all-time greatness. Character, 11. Kind of in your world. You know, the suspensions, the weed.
About that life.
He is about that life. Migos. And then the last one, I give him a 13, an accurate number for authenticity. When you're disgruntled, you say you're going to do something, and we don't want you to do that. Well, didn't do it. He didn't even fulfill his own demands. He didn't even live up to his own conversations. And that week 10, if I'm a player saying, oh, you going to miss out? Miss out for your standard. Miss out for what you said you were going to do it for. He's not even doing that.
You got him at a total of 69. Let me tell you why you're wrong about authenticity. You just don't get. You should not. If he, what you're saying, he didn't live up to his word.
Right. And
that's character. Does he present himself in an authentic fashion? Yes.
Let me push back. You know why? Because I've heard a lot of people woof tickets. Like, authenticity is like, be genuine, be sincere, be unique. Everyone's saying, I'm going to hold out, and then they all come back. So, to me, that's not authentic
right
there.
The way he presents himself in the media, I think, is the way that he is in real life. Now, did he maybe go back on his word here? I'll give you that.
Okay.
I'm telling you, you should knock him for character, not for authenticity.
Oh, okay. I take it.